You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Back in On the Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. We appreciate you listening. Coming up in 15 minutes, we will go inside the mind of the machine. Do us a favor. You can interact with the show on 913-576-7610. Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined one of my favorite guests that we have every week. Fridays at 3 o'clock. His name is Josh Vernier. He is our Royals insider. Vern, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Glad to be here.
Vern, since the last time we talked to you, two prominent players have opted out of the season, David Price and now Buster Posey today, for very different reasons. Based on what you're hearing, do you have any reason to think that anyone on the Royals could potentially opt out of the season?
No, because, first of all, and I'm not saying this is, look, Buster Posey explained why he's opting out, and it's a very commendable reason, but both Buster Posey and David Price, much like the other guys that have opted out, Ian Desmond, Ryan Zimmerman, they all already got paid, and I'm talking $70+ million over the course of their careers. The only guy inside the Royals clubhouse that has it like that is Alex Gordon and Danny Duffy, and both of them, to a man, said they never really considered opting out. Other than those two, Salvador Perez, I guess, could. And right now he's in quarantine, appears in good spirits, and he, too, never really considered the idea of opting out. Just about everyone else, you know, the other 54 guys that are here with the team, they don't have it like those players. They need to get their money while their career is still prosperous, right? So, no, I'm not expecting any of these Royals players to opt out. Now, if COVID keeps them out, that's a different story.
Speaking of COVID and keeping them out, we've seen multiple players test positive on the Royals as well as their managers. Have you heard worries, concerns from the players that the virus at least appears to be spreading amongst the team?
No. And now, let me be transparent here. The interviews that we're getting with Royals coaches and players are all done via Zoom. So they're sitting in the interview room with a humongous television in front of them, and anywhere from 4 to 14 different media faces staring back at them. So it's going to be very difficult to get a player to say something that he may regret or is maybe too honest for what the Royals organization would ask. That's just going to be the norm across Major League Baseball this season. It's not going to be very often, in my opinion, that a ball player says something that he wishes he could have back, because they're going to be very conscious and calculated in every one of these Zoom meetings. But what I'm hearing from all of these players, whether it's in these Zoom meetings or on the show on Thursday nights, is them, I don't want to say doing any sort of mental gymnastics, but them making a conscious effort to view everything through a positive lens, trying to take a negative and make it a positive, from Josh Staumont to Danny Duffy to Greg Holland to Hunter Dozier. They're all very quick to point out fellow Americans and people around the world that are struggling much more mightily than they are as big league players. So, no concern within the Royals organization. I haven't really heard it from anyone, Now, the guys that aren't with the team right now, the guys that have admitted to testing positive to COVID, I'm sure there's concerns on their part as far as, am I going to be ready come July 24th? I think the only concern that I'm really garnering from Royals players is, am I going to be where I need to be at my best for this 60-game stretch? But as far as COVID, these guys have done an impressive job, in my opinion, of having a positive mindset and being selfless, not only for their teammates, but for their community.
Vern, as you're aware, Patrick Mahomes signed the biggest contract in American team sports a couple of days ago. Before that, it actually was a baseball player, Mike Trout. I guess the difference is they're both incredibly talented and going to be first ballot Hall of Famers. Pat has already won a championship. At what point does Mike Trout need to actually start winning before he hears the criticism?
Well, I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. never won a championship, never went to a World Series, only went to one championship series, and he garnered like 98% of the votes to get into the Hall of Fame. And I think most of us, with all due respect to Barry Bonds, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. is the best or second best player of our generation. As far as criticism, look, if he stinks it up over 60 games, he'll receive the proper amount of criticism. But baseball, you know, I mean, the baseball has no comparison to football. A guy like Patrick Mahomes dictates the game every time he steps on the field. Mike Trout gets 4 to 5 at-bats and whatever is hit his way in center field, right? I mean, Willie Mays only went to one World Series, only won one World Series. Hank Aaron won one in 57 as a member of the Milwaukee Braves, but didn't win anything, didn't go to any World Series when he went to Atlanta. And Willie Mays, to me, is the greatest player of all time. And if it's not him, it's Hank Aaron. And they together have 2 World Series rings to their credit. And both of those World Series rings came very early in their careers before they became the superstars that we know them to be. So Mike Trout is in that class. He's that great. So if he gets to the playoffs and stinks, he'll catch a lot. But getting to the playoffs, it's not his burden to carry.
Yeah, lots of great comparisons there, no doubt. Vern's joining us here on The Drive. I think that a lot of people are holding out hope, especially the guy across from me. He calls himself, was it Hope Harrison? Cherington. I don't remember what we're calling him these days.
C.Hope.
He's all of a sudden, Vern, it's kind of creepy. He's like glass half full. I don't know what happened to the old guy that I fell in love with. But hey, look, let me ask you this. How good is the division? Because I think even Hope Harrison's talking about a wild card. How good are the rest of the teams in the division? Because the Royals are going to play them a lot this year.
Well, I think the reason why Carrington's hopeful is because 102 games got lopped off of the season schedule. That makes a lot of teams look much better. Now, how good is the division? Minnesota is maybe the best offense in the American League. Let's remember, they led the American League in home runs last year, and then they added Josh Donaldson in the offseason. So that offense is scary. They are by far the most talented team in the division. Chicago has more talent than the Royals, but much like the Royals, most of that talent is yet to prove it over 60 or 162 games. Cleveland has the pedigree. They don't have the pitching staff that they once did, but, you know, Jose Ramirez and Francisco Lindor in the middle of your lineup is still very daunting. You know, talent-wise, the Royals are clearly fourth in this division, but over 60 games, I mentioned Josh Donaldson. He can get cold for 2 weeks, and if it's the same 2 weeks where the Royals play the Twins 10 times out of 17 days, that could help the Royals leapfrog the Twins in the division. So, you know, predictions and prognostications in a 60-game baseball season, it's a fool's errand, man. Once they say play ball, once we get to the 23rd of July, it's foot firmly pressed on the gas pedal, and whoever can keep the car stable for 9 weeks is going to walk away with the division. I think all four teams have a chance. I don't think Detroit does. But the other four teams, I think, all have a legitimate chance.
That's where I'm at, Vern. It's basically get hot for 3 weeks, yeah. Be average for the other three. That's all you're asking them to do. If you can do those two things, and my stance has been simple. One team from the American League that we do not see coming is going to make the playoffs because of how fluky the season is. One team from the National League is going to do it. So everybody should feel like they have a shot.
No question. No question. And look, I'm not someone that's trumpeting the idea of you got to get out to a fast start. Man, just tread water, get hot for a week or two, and then go back to treading water, and you'll grab at least one of those two wild card spots.
That is my guy, Josh Vernier. He is our Royals insider joining us today on the show. Vern, really appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks a bunch.
Always. Thank you.
That is our guy, Josh Vernier, joining us today on the show.
When does a real Carrington come back? What if they're 5-10 a quarter of the way through the season?
And it's over. There's no reason to have hope anymore. They're done.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah. I mean, if they start off poorly, which would eliminate my hope, then we'll start talking about something else. But right now, while they're 0-0 and we're 2 weeks from the start of the season, I'm going to be hopeful and optimistic because there's no reason not to be when it comes to the Kansas City Royals. Coming up next, we'll go inside the mind of the machine right here. It's The Drive on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app.
The Drive, weekdays 2-6.
Back in on The Drive, we'll get to some Chiefs football coming up at the bottom of the hour. Keep it locked in right here on 610 Sports Radio and the radio.com app. Before we do that, let's take a trip inside the mind of the machine.
Jessica Simpson turns 40 today, C-Dot. Start 'em, sit 'em, cut 'em. Jessica Simpson, Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears.
Jessica Simpson, one. Say the two again.
Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera. Genie in a bottle.
Britney Spears, two. Christina Aguilera, three. Or I assume we're talking about their looks and not their musical ability. That's what I assume we were talking about.
I would actually, personally, I would rank them about the same, either order. Speaking of music, so I always check out to see what's trending.
You're ranking Jessica Simpson number one musically on this list?
No, I guess musically I would go Britney one. I'd probably put Jessica Simpson third. I'd probably put Christina Aguilera second. In their prime, Britney was the truth.
Yeah, she couldn't really sing, though.
It was everything, though.
My friends and I, we actually have this argument all the time. Who is the musician who's had the best singing career without being able to sing? And Britney might be number one on the list.
Maybe Bob Dylan.
Madonna can't sing either.
Bob Dylan's voice is terrible. He's a great songwriter. And I love Bob Dylan. It's just his voice isn't the most pleasant thing to listen to. So speaking of not pleasant to listen to, I was checking out what's trending on Twitter. And this was the number one trending thing earlier today in the world. There's an Asian pop band called D2, and they've got the biggest song out in the world right now. I'm going to play the beginning of it for you, and you tell me if this is something that you want to hear the rest of the song, all right?
Sounds like the intro of a Wu-Tang song.
Is that your thing? Would you give it a shot? That's D2. They're called D2.
Apparently I feel like huge. There has to be some more. That sounded like the intro. That didn't seem like the part where the beat drops. Like it's
oh, no,
part,
the beat drops the after that.
The 808's got it. Well, I couldn't hear the 808. I couldn't hear the kick. I couldn't hear the bass. You gave me the 10-second intro.
All right, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, I'm going to play the meat of that song for you because I don't think it gets any better.
I don't even think I heard the song.
It gets worse. That's why.
There's no way it could have got worse. They sound like they were summoning the spirits. I didn't hear anything.
It sounded like that to me, too.
I didn't hear any melody. I didn't hear any music.
Again, in the 4 o'clock hour, if you really want to hear this D2, I'll play you some more. Speaking of D2, what was the better Mighty Ducks movie, D1 or D2?
The second one's the better movie, I think, out of the two. The Knuckle Puck, I think it's just better characters. The story's more evolved. The second one's better than the first one.
Better than the Triple Deke? I mean, I respect the Knuckle Puck. My favorite scene from D2 was when they all get together and they announce the cities that they're from and they're getting back together for one more crack at whatever. Who were they trying to beat the second time around? They were trying to beat Iceland the first time.
They go to the Olympics, and that's when they realize that the flying V doesn't work anymore. They actually have to be good at hockey.
Well, the flying V, I don't know if that was ever like really a hockey thing. I think that was more of a Mighty Ducks movie thing, but I've never been a big hockey player. I don't know. 913-576-7610. Is a flying V a real thing in hockey? Ludacris, your boy, says that the next Fast and Furious will be set in space. Where do they go from there, or does that mean this is the end of the Fast and Furious run?
The moment that they go to space has to be the end of the Fast and the Furious. And they have had an amazing run. I told you guys, my first double date was to go see Too Fast, Too Furious. This is one of my favorite movie series. I go see them all in theaters. I'm a fan of the series. But the moment that they start racing cars in space, that's when we reach the end. Like, you've hit your level, your end of creativity. So, yes, the moment that they decide to go to space, I don't know when that's going to be. Could be Fast 9, could be Fast 12. That has to be the last one.
You would think. Something tells me that after they go to space, there's two more and then they're done. I don't know what the genre is. I don't know what the, I don't know after space, you know, where you go, but something tells me that they got to
go underwater at that point.
That's what I'm saying. You got to go
nowhere
else
to go.
That's all you got to do. Speaking of underwater, I used to always enjoy any science project that Bill Nye would do involving the H2O. We talked about Bill Nye yesterday. Is PBS the best channel of all time? Now, obviously, for what they did for children, there's no debate. They had Sesame Street and Barney and Mr. Rogers. And did you ever watch Arthur back in the day?
I did watch Arthur.
Reading Rainbow.
Then I say, hey.
I go on forever, bro.
What a wonderful kind of day.
All right, stop it, guys.
Hey.
Stop. Curious George. And then for the older crowd, what do you know about Antique Roadshow, boys?
Not really my thing.
What do you know about Bob Ross, boys?
I do remember him, the painter.
He recently died.
Well, when you say recent, I think it was like 10 or 15 years ago.
I thought I was like, I'll double check.
Bob Ross has not been with us for a long time, bud. I know me some Bob Ross.
He died in 1995.
Mm-hmm. So it's been a while. But still rest in peace to Bob Ross, even though it's been, what, a long time. Is that accurate? It hasn't been that long, has it?
I am sitting here looking
95?
At it. He was born in 1942. Rob, he died in 1995.
Yeah, he did recently pass away in 1995.
52 years old.
Is there a better channel than PBS?
Yeah, HBO. HBO is the best channel of all time. Just in terms of what it's done for pop culture and just like really pushing things forward, I think HBO is the best channel of all time.
No love for Ken Burns baseball on PBS?
No, I mean, I think PBS is great. I just think HBO is better.
UFC is going to be absolutely huge on Saturday night. So they got the Fight Island thing going for them. They got the Jorge Masvidal thing going for them. My question is, how much of it, CDOT, in all honesty?
No one is watching it more because it's at Fight Island. Like, there's
I disagree.
There's not a neutral observer that was like, hey, you know what? When they were having these UFC events in Las Vegas and Atlantic City, I wasn't into it. But hey, you know what? They're going to have it on this remote island in front of zero people. Now I'm in. Nobody is more intrigued by the Fight Island concept.
Yeah, no, you're wrong. Like, there are plenty of people that because it's
on Fight
Island.
I'm definitely more intrigued by Fight Island.
There's a lot of people.
I'm not gonna lie to you.
That, maybe not the next fight that they have on Fight Island, but this first time, people want to see what it's all about. I don't want to burst.
How is it going to be any different than when they've been fighting in America in front of no people?
Is it going to be on the beach? If it's on the beach, sign me up.
So here's the thing. That's what they want to make everybody think, because they show you the promo of the octagon on the beach with the sunset in the background and everything. No, it's happening inside. It's going to be pretty much like you just described, guaranteed.
Oh, and that's lame.
There's
they
not going to be
me.
Anybody there. It's going to look
that's
a lot like it did
that's what I'm
at
saying.
The Apex.
The promo had him on the beach. I was fired up.
That's
right,
what
but
I'm
that's
saying.
Their secret. Like, you're supposed to pay the whatever it is, $59.99, and then you find out that they're fighting inside, not on the beach. Either way, it's a hell of a call.
So it's going to be the exact same.
Yes. Pretty much.
So no one is interested because of this. Now, the card might get you in. Like, I'm interested in seeing these two individuals. Now, I will say this. I'm only intrigued because we talked to one of them at Radio Row, and now I know a little bit more of the backstory, and they don't seem to like each other. So I'm always going to be for watching two people fight that don't seem to like each other. But, yeah, I can't tell you anything else about this event, and I just want to see those two people fight.
I talked to both these guys, Masvidal and Usman. I'm looking forward to the Max Volkanovski fight as well. So Stanford cut a bunch of their sports the other day, and it was made a big deal. Oh, I can't believe it. COVID's killing all these different sports. If we're really being real, I'm going to sound like a jerk here. I'm going to name the sports that they cut, Carrington, and you tell me if you've ever tried the following sport. Squash.
I don't know what squash is.
I don't either, but when I said that earlier, Speck was highly offended. He was like, I grew up playing squash, and I was really good at it.
Squash. Speck grew up on the East Coast, too, so a little bit different culture.
All right, that's fair. Field hockey? You ever tried field hockey?
I'm black.
Are you? Okay, well, then do I have to ask you about synchronized swimming? Or?
I can't even swim.
Okay, that didn't make
sense. I'm definitely never synchronized with other people.
Unless someone else couldn't swim in the water with you.
Right, yeah, they're both going down at the same time. How about fencing?
Never fenced. No. Know what it is. Never fenced.
Okay,
though.
And then this is also in the water, so I know that you haven't done it. Lightweight rowing and or men's rowing. I don't know if the lightweight means that that's the weight of the boat or the weight of the people doing it. Those are the sports that they canceled. So, yeah, it sucks. But let's be real. Those are club sports.
I mean, let's be fair here, though.
Those are club sports.
There's still student athletes that get opportunities through those.
There's a debate team.
Yeah, I don't think the colleges should remove those, especially when they charge you as much as they charge to go for. My biggest thing in all of this is not mocking the sports that these kids participate in.
I'm not mocking them. I love squash. I have a lot of respect for squash players.
It's that Stanford has a, listen to this, $27.2 billion endowment. What's the point of having a $27.2 billion endowment if you can't save activities for the students? Why else does the money exist? What else is the money there for? It can't be real money if you're cutting opportunities for students, which I thought was the purpose of going to college, if you can't save those sports.
I'm sorry. The $27.2 billion, if you even take the 0.2, which is a whole hell of a lot of money, and spend it on synchronized swimming, then you spent too much on it. I'm sorry. That's how it is. Like, with these sports, they revolve around generally football and then basketball, which is why the conversation at some point is going to become,
well, of course,
can these universities keep operating if there's not a football season?
Of course, but again, it's about offering things for your students. You were able to play basketball at Kansas even though you weren't on the basketball team. Like, there was a gym for you to go work out and do those things. Like, it was part of the college experience. They shouldn't have taken that away from you because you weren't Sharon Collins.
I don't think I could have just gone rowing if I wanted to. I don't know. Maybe I could have. I never tried.
I assume you guys had a pool there, though. I assume if you were a student at Kansas and wanted to go swimming, yeah, somewhere, you had the opportunity
inside of Robinson. So yeah, if I wanted to swim or dive or maybe synchronize swim, are you suggesting that I take my canoe and I put it inside the pool at Robinson Gymnasium? I don't think that would work out very well.
If you got good enough to be on the rowing team, they should offer that to you as a student.
Before we get out of here, Zion, apparently his stepfather allegedly took $400,000 from Duke.
It ain't no allegedly. We know this happened.
Is Duke the next KU? Are they the next domino to fall?
I mean, everybody's trying to make it seem like they are. I don't think so.
Yeah, because Zion's your dude.
I don't think so. This is different. I don't think it's reached that level yet. Where, let's not forget, the people in the KU case testified in front of federal grand juries and the FBI was involved. I don't think we've reached that level yet with Duke.
It started with something like this, though.
It started. I'm with you. It is certainly trending in the direction that Duke could potentially be in trouble. They don't seem to have as much to stick on Duke and Zion as they did on Kansas. They had pretty concrete stuff on Kansas, whether it was Gatto, whether it was all the people that were involved in that. They don't seem to have all of those same things here.
You're now outside the mind of the machine.
Coming up next, keep it locked in. We'll talk about the Kansas City Chiefs and was last year's playoff run memorable? We'll get into that coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, 610 Sports Radio.
Back in on The Drive. Thank you so much for listening. Coming up in 30 minutes, we'll talk about, we perhaps have uncovered the one thing that Patrick Mahomes is bad at. You're listening to The Drive on 610 Sports Radio, 610sports.com, and the radio.com app. Do us a favor. You can text the show, 913-576-7610. Let's talk a little bit of Kansas City Chiefs football, and you asked an interesting question about the Chiefs playoff run.
So I think the last year's Chiefs playoff run is, nationally, it got a lot of love because they were fun to watch and Patrick Mahomes and all of that stuff. But I'm not sure if it's going to be looked at the same 10, 15, 20 years from now. I think it's going to take a little bit of time, C-Dot, for us to look back at how really special that run was. So think about it. The Chiefs got down early in the Texans game, and for all intents and purposes, it was over. I mean, no team in the history of the NFL has ever come back from a 3-touchdown deficit in the first half, let alone made up that deficit by halftime. Like, I think we would all agree that it was kind of like, you ever seen a snake get fed? You put that little mouse into the cage, and then maybe it walks around for a second, and then once the snake gets a hold of it, it's done.
This is basically the plot of Road Trip.
Yeah, that's what it was. Like, by halftime, when the Chiefs caught him, that game was over. The Texans had absolutely no shot. They ended up getting their asses kicked. And then the same thing happens the next week where Tennessee comes in. It's like, okay, hold on. We've seen this story before. And nobody shakes. Nobody's rattled. Everybody knows that you've got Pat and Andy. And the result is the same, where you get down double digits. Get down double digits in a playoff game and win that same game by double digits. So it's happened twice before in the playoffs. There have been two teams that have been down by at least 10 points and come back to win multiple games. Now, it's never happened the way the Chiefs did it, where they were down double digits and beat those teams by double digits. They just came back and won those games twice. Then a third time, the Chiefs had to play in a game known as the Super Bowl. And with a few minutes left in the game, they're down by double digits. And guess what happens? I don't need to tell you how the story ends. They win that game, and they win it going away. I think that it's going to take a few years, C-Dot, because we're in this bubble here in Kansas City where anything Pat, anything Kansas City is good. We attach ourselves to it. But I think outsiders are going to realize just how special this run was, where it's not like the Chiefs were so dominant they blew everybody away. The Chiefs were actually losing significantly in every single game before pulling away. It was a really crazy run.
I think what we're talking about is a difference between local and national. If we're talking about it on a local level, obviously people are going to remember this run for a very long time, and it will be held in very high regards because it was Mahomes' first, and we think that he's going to get multiple. The same way that Brady has won six of these, but there's something special about that first one against the Rams where you remember Elway saying that the Patriots should knee the football. Brady then takes them down the field. If you remember, he spikes it, the ball just bounces right back into him, and then Vinatieri makes that field goal. Like, mm-hmm. That one's just different than the other ones because it was the first one. I think the only playoff runs that we remember in the NFL are the improbable runs. We talk about the Giants for a reason. They were 9-7, and they went on this hot run. We talk about the Ravens run with Joe Flacco because they went on the road and won in New England. They went on the road and won in Denver, and they did it with Joe Flacco. Those are the only types of playoff runs that I think we really talk about. So on a national level, I think we'll talk about the Super Bowl, obviously, because they'll always show the highlights because of the Super Bowl, but in a different connotation. And I think anytime a team gets down big in the playoffs for the next 15 years, you know the game that they're going to point to as the one, hey, this game isn't over. Let's show you this highlight montage because your team has a chance to come back. Don't turn the dial. They'll show Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs being down 24-0 and coming back. The same way, if you remember that game where Buffalo played the Houston Oilers, they were down big and then they came back. So I think there's going to be individual things from this run that people are going to hold on to, but I don't think in a 10-15 year, they're going to say, man, the Chiefs went on this incredible run in 2020. They were a 12-4 football team with the best player in the NFL that won the Super Bowl. Those aren't really the runs that we hold in high regard.
I hear what you're saying. The run didn't come from an unexpected team or an unexpected player. Just the way they did it, I think, was incredibly memorable. I think that when you talk about, like, the Chiefs mentally now have such an edge over everybody else that they didn't have. I mean, think about the Texans coming in on that first Thursday night game. Let's keep our fingers crossed and everybody pray, if you believe in a higher power, that there's going to actually be that first game at Arrowhead on Thursday night. Let's say the Texans come here and they win the kickoff, Carrington. They come down and they score. And just for the sake of math, let's say they go for two, all right, and they're up 8-0. And then just let's say that the Chiefs turn the ball over and the Texans pick it up and they score again and they go for two again. And now they're up 16-0. And then the Chiefs punt and Texans come down and do the same thing. Now they're up 24-0. We just saw a scenario the last time the Texans were on a football field where they were in this stadium up 24-0 and ended up leaving with their tail between their legs. There can't be any number that any team can put up, especially at Arrowhead against Patrick Mahomes, where they feel comfortable because of the way the Chiefs playoff run ended up going. So what does it mean? I don't know. The only thing it means is we've heard in the past that sometimes teams, we heard this about Andy Reid, they take their foot off the gas pedal. No team is ever going to be able to take their foot off the gas pedal, even if they're up by three touchdowns with 3 minutes left, if Patrick Mahomes is on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. It kind of goes to what Mahomes said a couple of days ago when he says, I've heard my whole career about the things that I can't do. I think when you look at the Chiefs and they're down 14 heading into the fourth quarter, Mahomes has played poorly, you're not going to say, well, there's no way the Chiefs can't win this game because you've seen them do it before.
Of course not.
I also think it's going to force teams to continue to be aggressive against the Chiefs. We're having a very different conversation to me today in Kansas City if Houston simply goes forward on fourth down early in the football game.
Absolutely.
Like, I don't think the Chiefs had a whole lot of energy. I think the Chiefs were almost dead in the water at that point. If Houston goes forward on fourth down, converts it, and scores a touchdown, I think a lot of people are leaving Arrowhead, and I don't think the Chiefs win the Super Bowl. So I think, if anything, the lesson that people going against Mahomes and the Chiefs are going to be is, if you got a chance to sweep the leg, if you got a chance to absolutely break the will of the Kansas City Chiefs, you got to take it. You got to go for it on fourth and two, where if you're going against a team like Denver, you wouldn't go for it on fourth and two. You'd kick the field goal or do something different. If you're going up against this offense, especially this year with the firepower that they have to have, you got to try to maximize every single opportunity you have to score. That's how I think teams are going to try to attack the Chiefs.
And that's another huge advantage that the Chiefs are going to have this year, maybe that they haven't had the past couple of years when Pat's been their quarterback, that teams now know, no matter how much they're down, they have to act different and they have to call that game different than they would pretty much against any other team. Like, if you want to talk about other great offenses in the NFL, who would you say has the second best offense in the NFL? Like the Saints, Baltimore, maybe, or Baltimore, some of the team like that. Drew Brees is great, right? Lamar Jackson's great. Pat's on a whole different level right now, especially when it comes to his team getting behind. Like, we saw Lamar Jackson get behind in the playoffs a couple of years ago. What happened? His team lost. We saw Lamar Jackson get behind in the playoffs this year. What happened? His team lost. I don't know that he has that same DNA, that same chemical makeup. And I think the next thing that we're going to talk about is the clutch factor for Patrick Mahomes, because the truth is, the first couple of years that we've seen him, he's been so damn good and so close to perfect that that's one thing we probably didn't talk about enough. You can't be any more clutch than being down double digits in all three playoff games, including the Super Bowl, and then eventually winning that MVP trophy of that game. I mean, Pat's so good that we don't talk about the clutch gene, but he was certainly born with it.
Coming up in about 20 minutes, we'll get back to talking about Patrick Mahomes, and I think we have found the one thing in life that he could potentially be bad at. Let's talk about Sammy Watkins, who you talk about playoff runs. Sammy Watkins certainly had one of his own. So Sammy Watkins went on Sirius XM a couple of days ago, and he told a story that his agent this offseason was shooting for big numbers, but when the offseason got underway, he decided to prioritize other things. Sammy Watkins said, quote, "How much money do I need? My family is taken care of very well. Do I want to go out to a team and lose and get 1,000 yards with a team that's sorry, or do I want to come back with one of the best coaches, best quarterbacks, best organizations, best teams, and the best wideout group, arguably, and come back and try to fight for another championship?" Sammy Watkins has had a very interesting character arc. That his contract, I would say, was disappointing for a large majority of his time in Kansas City. But man, it took three games, I think, to kind of wash that bad taste out of your mouth. It took a contract restructuring where now I think we're back to the same place that we were at the beginning of this deal, and there's some renewed optimism around Sammy Watkins. I do think he ultimately made the right decision. Let's say that he says, "I don't want to restructure with the Kansas City Chiefs. Go ahead and cut me." You then go back out there. Maybe you get a little bit more money to go play for the Miami Dolphins or a team like that. Maybe you get a couple more 100 yards and have a big time season. You're not going to win a whole lot of games probably in that scenario. Or you can take a little bit less upfront and less guaranteed. You get the incentive to go out there and ball out this season because you got a lot of incentives to go out there and stay healthy, get catches, get yards, get touchdowns, and do those things, and continue to play with Patrick Mahomes. Like, I don't really think Sammy Watkins gave up a whole lot in this scenario if he plays well. If he has 900 yards and stays healthy this year, Sammy Watkins is going to make $13 million to play for the Kansas City Chiefs at wide receiver. You can't really ask to be in a better situation. You're right. Maybe you could have got $14 million to go out and play for the Miami Dolphins. But yes, I'd rather make the $13 million to play in Kansas City and have a chance to win, which must lower expectations like fans have placed on Sammy Watkins, than make $14 or $15 and go elsewhere and make more money, but also not play well.
Yeah, so now that he's only going to be playing for $7 million a year, if he has the 900 yards as you're talking about and eight touchdowns, and everybody's going to go, awesome, the Chiefs finally won that contract. And if he goes out there and has three touchdowns and 400 yards like he had last year, well, then everybody's going to go, cool, we only paid him $7 million. So this one makes all the sense in the world. Plus, I've never got the impression that at this point in his career, Sammy really, one, cares about the personal accolades, or two, even really wants to be a number one wide receiver. I know that sounds crazy, but I feel like Sammy's very comfortable being option number two or number three.
He's got a fantastic job. There's no expectations placed on Sammy Watkins. Hey, if Sammy Watkins goes out there this season...
Not anymore. There was because of the contract, but now there's not.
Yeah, I would say going into the first season, going into the second season, there weren't many expectations. I would say he underperformed on those expectations, but played well in the postseason. Now going into year three, I don't care about Sammy Watkins nearly as much as I did. If Sammy Watkins goes out there this season and plays in 13 games and has 700 yards,
fine.
I will deem that as a successful season. If he has 700 yards and four touchdown seasons, he is now being paid accordingly. So at this point, it's kind of the Sammy Watkins can make as much money as he wants to make. I now think the Chiefs have incentivized it where you could count it like clockwork. Sammy was going to miss a week 8 or week 9 game with the hamstring injury. It's now in your best interest to play through it and go out there and get on the field and try to have 8 catches for 60 yards. My issue with Sammy Watkins always was that his production didn't match the contract. Now that you've diluted the contract and he's taken a pay cut, if he makes $7 million to get you 800 yards receiving, that's a win for the Chiefs. I got no issues with Sammy. I'm over it.
Nobody, and I mean nobody, is better at getting paid money and taking it to the bank compared to their actual production, more so than Sammy Watkins. I mean, think about how many times the teams have decided, yeah, we're going to overpay for this guy. First, Buffalo traded up in the draft and took a wide receiver with a top 5 pick. Then after that, the Rams were like, yeah, I think that we'll take a shot on this Sammy Watkins guy and overpaid. Then the Chiefs did. I think anybody's a fool out there to think that if Sammy Watkins goes out there this year and performs, that there's not going to be one. I always say there's only one. There's going to be one team out there, even though if he wants to stay in Kansas City, that goes, all right, Sammy, you showed out in your contract year and had 8 touchdowns and 900 yards. That's a really, really good number 2 wide receiver. We'll give you 10, 12 million bucks a year. Here's a 2-year, $25 million contract. He can still get one of those. Let's play a game here real quick. When it comes to money that these guys have actually already banked, so anybody on the Kansas City Chiefs in their NFL career, who do you think has put the most money in the bank so far?
Probably Sammy Watkins.
He's second. $54 million. This list is crazy because the guys that you would think on there aren't at all. So I'll just give it to you. Number one, the guy that's made the most money. Not that's due to him, but that's already made the most money.
Tyrann Mathieu.
He's third. Good call. $47 million. Number one, you want to give it a shot?
Frank Clark.
No, he's not on the list yet.
He'll be there. He got $63 million guaranteed. I think he might be number one on the list.
What about Anthony Hitchens?
No, Anthony Hitchens. Well, Hitchens has made $25 million in his NFL career. So it's Eric Fisher at $61 million. And then you got Mitchell Schwartz, which is fourth at 37. And then you got Chad Henne. Has made $34 million
now
in
that
his
I think
NFL
about it,
career.
It makes sense on Fisher because he got the number one overall and he's longer into his second contract than other players.
And my whole point in saying this is that timing has to match up with what a team needs. And what the Chiefs need right now, they don't need Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins, if you really think about it, he's a luxury. They've got the best tight end in the league. They got the best quarterback in the league. You could argue they got the best wide receiver in the league. They got Mecole Hardman. I mean, I don't know exactly where Sammy Watkins fits into the picture. He was never going to make $18 or $20 million. So I'd like to meet the man or woman out there, the Chiefs fan, that has a problem with what Sammy Watkins is getting paid now. Like, if you had a problem with the last couple of years, cool. I did also. Me and Cena, we talked about it all the time. He didn't perform. Now, when the games got big, Sammy played his greatest, and everybody always wants to point to that. They needed him to win this game, didn't they? At $7 million a year, I don't see how anybody could complain.
Coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll get back into the Kansas City Chiefs and talk about Patrick Mahomes. But before we do that, Rob, hit my theme music. I've got a question to ask you guys. So Joel Embiid pulled up yesterday in the NBA bubble. He was wearing a hazmat suit. Now, I'm all for keeping yourself safe and social distancing and trying to do your best to avoid the coronavirus. But I've got a legitimate question for you guys as KU fans. Is Joel Embiid more notable for his personality or his play in your mind?
Well, it's his play. I mean, he happens to also have a great personality to go along with it, but it's got to be his play. Joel Embiid is probably one of the, I would say, three best big men in the league and a guy that I would expect at some point to win a championship or two. And if he continues at this trajectory, just by the numbers, he's probably going to end up in the Basketball Hall of Fame. Now, you always point out they let everybody in the Basketball
Hall
of Fame.
I'll happily take the under on 2 championships for Joel Embiid.
Of course, the thing is, LeBron is not going to be around that much longer. Either is Kevin Durant and some of these other dudes. So
he
hasn't
been to the Eastern Conference Finals. The hell with LeBron, he ain't been to the Eastern Conference Finals.
He was about to if Kawhi Leonard didn't get the luckiest bounce in the history of all bounces.
Shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Anyway, I get you. Horseshoes and hand grenades. But he does have a great personality. He's had this personality even when he was at KU and he wasn't very comfortable behind a microphone because he was still getting used to the English language. Now that he's mastered that, Embiid's just a really likable guy. And maybe it's because I'm a KU fan. I thought it was funny. He showed up to the bubble in a hazmat suit. That's funny.
I think he's very funny. I just was curious, as KU fans, do you guys know him more for his hooping or for his personality. Rob, where are you at? KU fan. Do you know Joel Embiid more for the antics or for on the basketball court?
I'm going to lean antics, but I think the reason we like his antics is because he's a good player. Like, I looked at his numbers compared to a Cav great Andre Drummond. He has more points but less rebounds than Drummond. I mean, they're similar players, but Drummond no one likes. Embiid is better, but his personality is what makes him so popular. He's probably not even the best player on his own team right now. You can make an easy argument for Ben Simmons being a more valuable player. But the fact that he winked at Rihanna and did the whole deal, Joel Embiid's personality is what makes him so likable.
Ben Simmons is a 1% career three-point shooter. Joel Embiid, who's 7 feet tall, is a 33% career three-point shooter. He's averaging 25 points a game and almost 12 rebounds. I mean, he's a great basketball player.
I'm not insulting the man's ability. I'm just saying I think the personality is the bigger deal.
Let me ask you guys this. I mean this again honestly. How much longer do you think this personality can work for Joel Embiid if his team doesn't start winning championships? Because as talented as the Sixers are, they got two guys who are first-team All-NBA talents. They're the 5 seed in the Eastern Conference. Can you be doing this at 31 with no rings? I'm curious if you can be doing this because I think it's funny too, and I think it's enjoyable. But are we going to be taking this from Joel Embiid at 29 years old with no championships? Like at some point, is there a, hey, your team got to start winning these basketball games if you got the ability of Hakeem Olajuwon?
Well, you said 31. He's 26, so that gives him 5 more years, and I wouldn't be surprised.
They don't seem close to winning a championship right now.
In 5 years, I mean, everything could change. We'll see what the landscape of the league is. And not to mention, Embiid, he's only played 2 years. Like, his first year, he only played 31 games. This year, because of COVID, he's only played in 44. So we're talking about a guy that's played 2 full seasons. I feel like, let's give him a little bit of a chance.
I agree. Let me ask you a little bit of time. Let me ask you this. If you could have Jason Tatum or Joel Embiid, who would you rather have?
I take Tatum just because Embiid always is going to come down to those, the injuries. Like, I mean, he's missed almost as much time as he's played.
I'm shocked you would take Tatum.
Tatum's a stud.
I take Embiid, and that's personal bias because everyone on that Celtics team is trash and I hate all of them.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
No, every single one of them.
Jason Tatum's been averaging about 30 points per game the last 3 months of the NBA regular season. I think next year Jason Tatum probably be a top 7-8 scorer in the league. I mean, I think Jason Tatum's one of the future best players in basketball, and he's stayed relatively healthy.
Who has a better career, Zion or Joel Embiid?
Now you're talking about injury concerns again. I'd probably take Embiid because we've never seen somebody as big with the game that Zion has. It's hard to imagine he's going to stay healthy. Now, I don't have my crystal ball. I'm not a doctor. I don't know exactly what's going on, but it's hard to imagine that a guy that's the size of a Mack truck is going to be able to run up and down an NBA court 82 games a year. Embiid, at least for now, appears to be as healthy as he's been in a while. Now, take that with a grain of salt because Embiid's always injured, whether it's his legs or his back or whatever it is. But I think that Embiid will eventually win championships and will eventually win championships in Philadelphia. There's always been a lot of talk about breaking up him and Ben Simmons.
I don't think they're going to win a championship together.
I'd give it a couple more years. Give it a couple more years. Add another piece. My only problem is last year that team was so stacked.
I thought Al Horford was the secret to success.
It was Jimmy Butler, in my opinion.
Like, last year they had Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler, and Al Horford, and they didn't get to the Eastern Conference Finals.
And Tobias Harris. Yeah, that team was stacked. Team was absolutely stacked. So we'll see. I think at some point, again, give it time. We're talking about a guy that's played really 2 full seasons in the NBA, and I don't think you could name probably 2 centers that you'd rather have over Embiid now.
The center position's trash in the NBA, too, to be fair. There's like 3 of them.
Well, every team has a 7-footer. Not a lot of teams have a Joel Embiid.
I mean, center's kind of like tight end in the NFL. There's like 3 good ones, and then it's like a bunch you just throw in a hat.
Well, he's not like a turn your back to the basket and only play down low.
No, I think
Embiid's got a hell of a skill set.
He's got a hell of a skill set. He'll be the next Charles Barkley. He'll never win a championship. Congratulations to Joel Embiid. Before we get out of here, I have a really quick question to ask you here. I got a lot of questions to ask you. Let's talk KU basketball and then UFC. So this Jorge Masvidal guy, I know a little bit about him. Now, I know more about him when you said he was a top 20 relevant athlete in America, and it completely, my head exploded. Can you call yourself the BMF if you're a plus 250 favorite in a fighting event? Like, I don't know much about the UFC. You know this. I am a novice. I'm trying to learn more about it because it's something that you're into. But I feel like if you call yourself the BMF, you have to be a favorite in every single fight.
Well, first of all, he's taking this fight on like 6 days' notice. He didn't get a camp. he's fighting against the champion. He's not the champion. The champion, Usman, has lost one fight. Masvidal's lost like 18 in his UFC career.
So I'm just saying he has to have a new nickname.
And
then.
The BMF, it's not like he said to Dana, hey, I want to fight Nate Diaz, and whenever I win, I want The Rock to put on a belt that you guys make up called the BMF title. That was Dana White. That was promotional, and it was genius, and they sold out Madison Square Garden. So it's like giving yourself a nickname. People are, oh, your nickname's so corny, the sports machine. I didn't give it to myself. Like, I'll tell you the story if you want. Just tweet me and all. But I think
what I'm saying is, but you keep calling yourself. I hear what you're saying. You didn't give yourself a nickname, but you call yourself the sports machine. I don't know this Jorge Masvidal fella. I met him for 5 minutes. I assume he calls himself the BMF.
Yeah. I mean, I went up to him and I go, oh my gosh, it's the BMF.
And he was like, oh yeah, that's me.
Yes.
I'm just saying, can you call yourself that Ambia 2 plus 50 favorite? Like LeBron, he calls himself King James. You can't call yourself King James if you're Blake Griffin.
Well, there's a difference.
You're not the king. Here's you're a good thing. Player. Not
Let me
the
explain
king.
To you. In fighting, there's a difference between being the best and being the baddest. He's not
how
the best.
How is he the baddest if he's a plus 250 dog? It sounds like this Usman fella's the baddest and the best. It sounds like he's got both of those boxes checked.
We're about to see. Like, I think that when you talk about Masvidal in this fight, he's definitely a live wire because, as we've seen in the case of Ben Askren and Darren Till and a bunch of other guys you've never heard of, he can knock you out. We've seen that. It's just it's wrestling versus fight. This is going to be a hell of a fight.
Who's
now,
winning?
I'll put my money on Masvidal just because, like I said, he's a live wire, and you can't make any money with Usman.
You wonder why you can't make any money? Because he's an overwhelming favorite over the BMF.
This is going to piss you off. Here's what's going to happen. Usman's going to win. I'm going to bet on Masvidal. And I'm not doing that so I can come on Monday and say, see, I told you so. I know that's what you think I'm doing. That's what's going to happen. Like,
that's the ultimate head.
I'm telling you what's going to happen.
Peak
head. Yeah, it's going to happen. Usman's going to win the fight. There's a reason why he's favored like that. I'm going to take Masvidal.
I'm just asking you, who do you think? I don't care who you're betting on. I'm asking, like, your official Levine lock. These two big fighters.
Usman wins in a decision. It goes 5 rounds because it's a main event. I don't think anybody submits or knocks out anybody in all likelihood. It goes to the cards. It's a close fight, and I think Usman wins.
So the main fight's not on an island, and it's going to be a decision. You are running me away from this event, Sean.
Well, then you're not welcome to my house.
I just want to say, that's what you would spend $60 on? I can't wait to steal this fight.
Watch the Jose Aldo fight. Watch Doug Rose fight. Watch Max fight. It's a great card.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And Dana White said earlier today that if Masvidal wins, then they're going to do what they can to set up a Masvidal-Conor McGregor fight, which would be the biggest fight in the history of the promotion. Would you watch that one?
No.
Yeah, you would.
I'm only watching one of these fights, and I'm watching the main event. That's the only fight I'm interested in.
Okay.
I'm not interested in any of these other fights.
Fine.
Coming up next, we'll talk about Patrick Mahomes. I think we have found the one thing that he is bad at. We'll discuss it next. It's The Drive.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.